Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Silence is golden when you're on a cycling trip. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's Advanced Studio Classroom program. Today is July 7th. We are on our second day of our lifestyle article. This article is entitled The Thrill of Cycling in Silence. So in total, it's a three-day article. So we are continuing from yesterday. And back in the studio is Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Linda. Hello, everyone.
So, we were introduced yesterday to the author and how he cycles on a long cycling trip that is without any music, podcast, audiobook. He doesn't listen to anything, right? And we learned how people react when he tells them that he doesn't listen to anything when he's on the bicycle 6 to 9 hours a day for 3 months. And what is their reaction usually?
They are gobsmacked. They are dumbstruck. They are almost bereft. Three words we learned yesterday, all of which means stunned, amazed, so surprised and shocked that you can't speak.
Yeah, they find it unbelievable. He said in our article yesterday that people can comprehend that it's a daunting physical challenge. They probably wouldn't want to do it, or they, you know it would be really hard. But they can understand that. But they can't understand doing it in complete silence.
Right.
But he goes on to say that it's actually pretty awesome. It's actually, like, silence is golden. It's really nice to be able to ride without listening to anything except the sounds.
Yeah, and he makes the point that he's not against media or phones in general. He uses them as much as anyone. While he's on the trip, he uses his phone to navigate, to check the weather, or even just to check social media, to dork around on social media, as he says. It just means to use it casually, to play around with it. But when he's actually out there, moving the pedals, going down the road, then he prefers silence, no media.
Yeah, it's actually necessary. Like, the phone is essential for navigation on the bicycle. Otherwise, it would be difficult to get around, to know where you're going. But speaking of listening to music, popping in earbuds or putting on headphones, when do you put in your earbuds or put on your headphones to listen to stuff?
Yeah, these days, well, I mentioned yesterday that when I'm traveling in a vehicle of some sort, like in a car, a bus, a train, or a plane, then I'll be more likely to put on earphones or...
In the car? Really?
Sure.
Oh, well, like, okay, if you're on public transport or...
Right. No, if I'm in a
riding
car,
in the car with, like, someone else driving.
The car, okay. Yeah, the driver always gets to choose the music, but if I was in it with someone else, I'd use headphones. But when I'm not doing that, I really just use headphones or earbuds. Sometimes if I'm having a meal by myself and I want to watch a video on my phone, or listen to... I'm a baseball fan. I like to watch recaps of baseball games. That have been played, and so I'll put in my earbuds over lunch sometimes and watch the recap of the game while I'm eating, if I'm not eating with someone. So that's really the only times I would do it. I don't regularly go for these long-distance bike trips or even long walks, so I don't do it out there.
There are people that have earbuds in 24 hours, like all waking hours.
Yeah.
Like, they're just constantly, like, in their ear. It's part of their ear. And Yeah, I find that sometimes distracting because you don't know if they're listening to you or if they're listening to something else, or you don't know if you have their attention. So I usually just put in earbuds if it's a noisy environment and I need to concentrate or I need to listen closely to something, then I'm allowed to do that, especially if it has noise cancellation. Then I can really listen to hear clearly whatever media I'm listening to, because I'm very protective of my ears or my hearing, because I don't want to have hearing problems later in life. So I never turn it up, the volume up really high. I always keep it low. So, you know, I don't damage my hearing.
Yeah.
But I think people also use earbuds or headphones as a barrier. Like, it means now the wired headphones are back in style because it's more obvious that you have something in your ear. Like, if you just have earbuds, because they're also really small, people might not be able to tell that you have something in your ear. But with the wire ones, it's very obvious.
Yeah, you're making a statement.
Yeah, so that's kind of like, oh, don't talk to me, I'm busy. I have something, you know, I have something else that I'm listening to. So it can be a barrier to communication, sometimes intentional.
Yeah. You
know? So I guess we can be aware of that, you know, how that can impact others. But it is a good thing when you want to just focus on listening to something or to cut out the distraction that is around you. All right. So we will continue our article today to learn more about our author on his silent cycling trip. Let's get into our first reading now.
Part of why I don't wear earbuds while riding is safety. I'm often riding along smaller country roads with SUVs and 16-wheelers whooshing past, barely a few feet away. I want to sense when they're coming up behind me. I want to be able to hear the thrum of an approaching engine. I once tried some earbuds that let the outside sound bleed through, which kind of worked. Still, I worried I might get too absorbed in the music and stop being vigilant about the traffic. So, I ditched them. But I found that I didn't miss it. It turns out that, when I turn off media for 7 hours on end, my cycling brain goes to some really interesting places. One of the things about cycling is that your mind is simultaneously busy and free. Cycling requires you to make a lot of constant tiny decisions. Avoid that pothole. Watch out for that pedestrian. Swerve around that constellation of broken glass near the curb. You need to be vigilant. The psychologist Nick Moore writes about how navigating traffic on a bike requires a minutely focused state. The world contracts to a space just a few inches wide and a million miles long, outside which nothing exists. But these decisions aren't hard to make, and they're over quickly, so I don't wind up being mentally exhausted by them.
Our author gives a very practical reason for not wearing earbuds. It's not because, you know, he wants to prevent people from talking to him, but it's this matter of safety, right?
Yeah. You're out there biking on the road, and, you know, if sometimes it's just you and the road and nature around you, but sometimes there's other people around and other people driving trucks or SUVs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you need to be aware of them.
Which can be very dangerous, because if he gets hit by one of those, like, he will be seriously injured, or it could even, be worse. So you always want to be aware when you're cycling, when you're on the road, because as the cyclist, We have a lot more to lose when you're up against vehicles, cars or 16-wheeler trucks.
Right, and they're not just, you know, sitting there passively. They're whooshing past, as he says, a sort of onomatopoeia there, a word that sounds like what it is describing. To whoosh or to whoosh with a W, sometimes you'll hear it that way, whoosh past, just as you might guess, means to go past. A large thing goes past you quickly with a rush of air.
Yeah, but it's the actual sound that it might make, whoosh, when it's passing. And it can be very scary, especially if the truck or the car, the bigger the car or truck, of course, the more impact it will have. But when it passes you, like, you can feel the air, actually. Yeah. And if they're going really fast and very close, it could knock me off my bicycle because of the effect. And so it's very, it's polite to give a cyclist birth, like, to give a cyclist space. So kind of like when you're passing a car, you kind of go around the car. So just give cyclists some space. Please don't pass them too closely because it's very scary and can physically injure the cyclist, like throw them off and then they, you know, lose balance.
Right. And that's why he doesn't want to be listening to music then, because as he says here, he wants to be able to hear the vehicle approaching him from behind so he can prepare. He wants to be able to hear the thrum, he says, of an approaching energy. The thrum, another sort of onomatopoeia there, just means a steady, continuous sound of something, usually a machine, like that's a thrum. And so you can imagine the thrum of an approaching engine, you know.
Yes, it gets louder as it gets closer. So he can be aware of how exactly where it is in relation to him.
He's ready for that whoosh.
Exactly. And he's not thrown off balance. Actually, he did try to use earbuds while cycling, right? And now, we, like, with technology, there are earbuds that allow sound in, like the earbuds that I have. Yeah, there are different modes that you can use, like completely canceling the noise from outside, or being able to hear it, or being able to actually to highlight the outside sounds so that you're more alert. Like, so that would be helpful when you need to pay attention to outside sounds, like in traffic. So technology does allow for this, for the sound to bleed in or seep in so he can hear outside sounds, which kind of worked, but he was worried that he would get too absorbed in the music or whatever he was listening to.
Right, that it would be too good. It would be too engaging. Not that he couldn't hear outside sounds, but that he would ignore them. He wouldn't pay attention to them because the music's so good.
And that would prevent him from being vigilant about the traffic, being aware, alert about the traffic. So that would affect his safety. And then he decided to ditch them, right?
Yeah.
He didn't throw them away, right?
Yeah, ditch
can mean throw away, but it just means that he got rid of them, because it would affect his safety, right? And what did he find out?
He really found out that he didn't miss it after he ditched them. He wasn't reaching for them. We sometimes say he didn't miss it. It turns out that when I turn off media for 7 hours on end, meaning for 7 hours continuously, my cycling brain goes to some really interesting places.
Yeah. So he gave the practical reason why he doesn't want to listen to anything, safety. But now he's getting to the reasons why it's positive, why it's a good thing to not listen to music. And one of the things about cycling is that your mind is simultaneously busy and free. So it's both busy and free, which is an oxymoron, right? These two seemingly contradictory things happening at the same time.
Right.
How can your mind both be busy and free?
Yeah.
Well, he explains.
Right, that cycling requires you to make a lot of constant tiny decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Avoid that pothole. Pothole, just a hole in the road. Avoid that pothole. Watch out for that pedestrian. Pedestrian, a person who's walking. Swerve around that constellation of broken glass near the curb. Three vocab words there. Swerve, to turn suddenly and sharply. Constellation, those are the pictures that the stars in the sky at night seem to make if we look at them in a certain way. And he's using it here to describe broken glass on the road near the curb, the little side of the road there that's slightly raised.
So a collection of broken glass, right? Which
might
glisten or shine in the sunlight, right? So it might look like stars. Just like a descriptive way to describe the broken glass on the ground. So your mind is constantly engaged, like avoiding these dangers, like trying to keep safe. So it's busy in that sense. So like I said earlier, you need to be constantly vigilant when you're on the bicycle and cycling. And in Asia, I think you have to not just like look what's in front of you, to the left or right, and below you, but also what's above you, behind you. You know, you have to look in all directions because the danger can come from any direction.
You need to be vigilant, yes.
Yes.
I love the description he quotes here from the psychologist Nick Moore, who writes about how navigating traffic on a bike requires a minutely focused state, a level of awareness, minutely, very small, something very small. And so a minute focus means paying careful attention to the smallest details of something.
Yes, paying very close attention, very careful attention. And your world contracts, is reduced to this space of just a few inches wide and a million miles long, outside which nothing exists. So you are in kind of this bubble, right?
Right, right.
That's continuing for a very long distance, but you're still like, it's just this very small space when you're on the bicycle.
Right. It's huge forward and backwards, and it's very small left to right. That's why he says a space just a few inches wide from one side to another, but a million miles long. I love that, those opposites there, outside of which nothing exists. It's just you and that strangely shaped space.
Yeah. And these decisions aren't difficult to make, and they're over quickly, right? Okay, just quickly avoid that swerve, turn here, and they're over. And it doesn't wind up being mentally exhausting. So even though you're making all of these decisions, many decisions over and over, it's not exhausting. It's not exhausting kind of decision making. And when I was reading this, it reminded me of a movie. It's called Premium Rush.
Yes.
Came out in 2012. It's about a cyclist, actually, someone who is a courier, a messenger in New York City. So he delivers messages via bicycle. And it is a bit exaggerated, like the
right.
circumstances.
It's a movie. Yeah. It's, you know, an action movie. So it takes some liberties with reality.
But that he gets into. But when we're talking about all the decisions that you have to make when going through an intersection, like they really bring that to life. They put it in slow motion, and like his mind is like thinking of the best way because, you know, he prides himself on getting somewhere the fastest, right? Delivering it in the fastest amount of time as possible. And yeah, this is just the strategies that he thinks about in split seconds, before he makes a decision. But it is very cool.
It's well done. You see him trace out little paths through the cars ahead of him. Like, oh, I need to go left there, then right there. Oh, but then I'd hit the truck. So what if I go this way? And all in a split second, just the way movies can do.
It happens very quickly. Yeah. But it is very much like the decisions that we make on the bicycle. Like, we have to make these decisions very quickly, look at our options, but it's over. And once it's done, it's done. It's not exhausting. The actor in that movie is Joseph Gordon-Levitt, if you're a fan of his. But it is quite entertaining, all about cycling. All right, so we know that cycling requires a lot of decisions, but it's going to take us to an interesting place. Like, we didn't get so much into that, but we'll get into that in our next reading now.
A feast for the senses. Meanwhile, there's a ton of stimulation. Cycling cross-country is a feast for the senses. While arriving in a city, I'd pass by ornate graffiti inside railway underpasses and marvel at the often corroded architecture on the outskirts of town. Downtown, I'd hear things, snatches of overheard conversation from people I passed by, or bits of Bhangra music blasting from a fast food joint. Out in the deep countryside of the Great Plains, I'd pass by sprawling crop-watering machinery splayed across fields like a massive stick insect, and watch it come alive in the dawn, puffing clouds of mist over the green wheat and corn.
Uh, a feast for the senses. So a feast is a big banquet where you have lots of food, a lot of good food. So what does it mean if something is a feast for the senses?
Right. Well, you have means you have a lot of good food for the senses. And this is not including the sense of taste, obviously, but for the sense of seeing and the sense of hearing and the sense of smelling and probably the sense of feeling when you're out on a bike and the wind is blowing across your face and maybe your bare arms or legs, and you can smell flowers if you're out in the countryside, or, you know, a sort of city, smoky kind of smell, and you can see things, obviously, and hear things. All the senses are stimulated. There's a ton of stimulation for the senses. Stimulation,
yeah.
Something that makes you more active or more enthusiastic.
Yeah. On the bicycle, I get so much stimulation. That's why I feel I don't need to wear headphones or earphones, because I get enough stimulation from just the sights and sounds around me.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to pay attention, like for safety reasons, and also just be able to enjoy what's going on around me. I just never get bored. And I think that is one of the biggest reasons why people are so awestruck, dumbstruck when our author tells them that he doesn't listen to anything on long bike rides, because it's like, wait, what are you doing? Like,
yes,
you why? Must be bored out of your mind.
Yeah.
But when I'm on the bicycle, I'm never bored. There's always something to stimulate me and like to keep my mind and senses alert.
Now, do you bike more through the countryside or more through a city area, would you say?
Mostly city, because that is where life takes place. Unless I'm going on a trip outside the city, most of my cycling is just around. And you know, traffic here in Taipei City can get a little crazy. So for safety reasons, I especially like don't want to listen. I don't want to be distracted, so I can always know what's going on around me, so I don't get hit by anything or I don't run into anything. And I think that can happen. Although I mostly go on autopilot because it's also roads that I know very well, I still don't want to make a mistake, because there have been incidents where I wasn't fully paying attention and then almost like did something that could have been disastrous. Mm. Like, oh, I need to pay attention more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I was thinking too much about something, or maybe something just happened and then I was lost in thought. But usually like my senses, like on autopilot, I'm still aware, and I'll just reflex will help me to avoid any disasters. But always have to be aware.
Yes. No, it's possible to get distracted even without music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's always need to be in that defensive driver status when you're on the road. All right. So our author cycles through cities, cycles through countryside, and when he's going through the city, he passes ornate graffiti inside railway underpasses. And graffiti is usually done by spray paint, like on walls, on different places, right? It's often in places that people don't really want to see graffiti.
Right.
But he describes this graffiti as ornate.
Yeah, very fancy, detailed, intricate.
Right, or decorative.
Decorative,
right?
Yes.
And so this is one of the sights that he'll see. And he can marvel at often corroded architecture on the outskirts of town. We have a couple vocabulary words here. What does it mean to marvel?
Yeah, to marvel. It means to express great surprise or admiration at something. And we might wonder how anyone would marvel at corroded architecture. Corroded, if something is corroded, it means it's being slowly destroyed by the effect of water and wind and chemicals and time, basically. Corroded metal is that metal that has that sort of rust brownish color to it, and maybe it's even starting to fall apart. And yet he says how he would sometimes marvel at the often corroded architecture on the outskirts of town. And you can kind of understand that if you look at the world world in a certain way. There is a sort of a beauty in the gloom of an old factory that's sort of falling apart and full of corroded pieces, just like the way an old castle is sometimes mm-hmm. beautiful in its wreckage rather than when it's brand new.
Yeah. Yeah, and that can be an art form as well. I know people
exactly.
who go and take photographs in old, decaying buildings. It might be a little
right,
dangerous,
yeah.
just be careful. But there is a beauty to that. The building is falling apart, but it shows you the age or maybe the history of it. And so it is something that you would admire or marvel at, depending on the architecture. But it can be very beautiful. So he would see this on the outskirts of town, so maybe abandoned buildings,
yeah.
Parts of outside the town that are no longer being lived in or being used. And then when he'd go downtown in
right.
the city or in town, he'd hear things. So
yeah.
that we saw the appeal to his sense of sight, and now we're hearing about the appeal to his sense of sound. So he would hear snatches of overheard conversation from people passing by. And yeah, you only get a piece, only get a
right,
snatch,
a
like
snatch,
a small piece of the conversation because you are passing them. And, you know,
exactly.
unless they are also on a bicycle or some moving vehicle, you're not going to hear much longer of the conversation.
Right. Or bits of Bhangra music, of music from North India and Pakistan. Bits, you know, synonymous with snatches there. Blasting from a fast food joint.
Mm-hmm.
Joint, a nice sort of American word there for a cafe or a restaurant that is kind of simple, kind of modest. You wouldn't describe a fancy restaurant as a joint necessarily, although you could, but that's the basic idea here. A fast food joint, meaning a place where they sell fast food.
Yeah, and here in Taipei, I would hear sounds of karaoke, you know,
yeah. people
singing by the river or, yeah, different sounds of music, types of music and languages too on my bicycle. And so that's what he would hear in and out of town. And then when he was out in the deep countryside of the Great Plains, he'd pass by sprawling crop watering machinery. And where is the Great Plains?
Right. The Great Plains is this huge grassland region right in the middle of central North America, extending from basically Canada, Alberta, Saskatchewan, southward. Down to Texas, just this vast region of grass, most of it used for cattle ranching and wheat farming.
So there would be a lot of fields, like flatlands.
Exactly.
And he saw this crop watering machinery. So sprawling, it's spread out. Another word for that used here is splayed across the fields like a massive stick insect. So this machinery, so it's supposed to water the crops, it had legs like a giant insect, right?
Right,
that was
spread wide
out.
Open, mm-hmm. splayed open like that.
And the author would watch it come alive in the dawn, puffing clouds of smoke over the green wheat and corn.
Clouds of mist.
Mist,
yeah.
Yes.
Which is like smoke.
From the machine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we will continue our journey. We have one more day to go on this bike journey, so please join us tomorrow. I'm Linda.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.